Welcome to episode 512 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, I have learned something this week.
I think we've all learned a lot of things this week,
well,
Richard,
yeah.
But what is it that you learned this
week?
I've
learned that we have been doing this right for the last 8 years. You and I have a weekly conversation where we're nowhere near each other.
And that somehow still works effectively?
It does indeed. It does indeed. So, you know, the show goes on. Everybody needs a little bit of something else to think about.
Yeah.
And so let's dive into it with some feedback. We have feedback from Brennick, and feedback, of course, can reach us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. Brennick says, much like Richard, I found myself with less of a desire to build and manage my own home server years ago, so I switched to Synology. I've been extremely happy with them since switching. I found the 1800 series to be the best bang for the buck as far as price per bay goes. If you jump up to the 12 bay, the cost per bay rises. In addition, most of the larger units no longer support SHR2, which is their hybrid RAID that supports two drive parity and allows you to mix drive sizes. Well, I appreciate that thought. And, you know, certainly I'm still at a point where I need to make a decision on where to go there. I know I'm not going to do the Unraid thing just because that's a little bit too much work for me. And I definitely want one of the out of the box solutions. It's either going to be Synology or QNAP. So Brennick has made the case for Synology. Anyone who wants to weigh in on QNAP, I'm eager to hear your thoughts. He also has a thought for you. I believe, anyway, Josh, that this thought is for you. He says, I'd also like to file a complaint about gaming news. Warlords are invading New York, and no one brought it up. I'm starting to think Josh might be a rogue agent.
You have no idea what he's talking about, do you?
I have no idea whatsoever.
He is talking about the latest expansion to The Division 2, one of my favorite games of the last year or so. He's correct. I did not bring up the Warlords of New York expansion for The Division 2 last time we talked. I don't even think it was out yet. Let's see. We last recorded on like the 3rd, I think. And I think the expansion came out a couple days later, or maybe it was that day. So give me a little bit of a break, Brennick. I have played it since then, since we last recorded, and it's more Division 2, so I like it. They've changed some of the gear stuff, which I guess is better, but I'm not someone who's spending hundreds of hours in the Division 2 and going around and trying to make the perfect gear set for my agent. No, it's basically just more missions and stuff to do. So I'm definitely enjoying it, and I've not played through all of it yet. But yes, I'm going after those warlords in New York, and I have not gone rogue. That's not me.
Okay,
not my style.
I'm glad to hear that. That would be upsetting.
All right. Well, thank you to Brennick for writing into us. Again, that email address is entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. So we missed 2 weeks. I think it was my fault that we missed last week. I don't know. I just always blame myself. It's pretty much always me when we miss. So, and last week feels like last year.
It really does,
point.
Doesn't it?
Oh, man. Man, oh, man. So we have a lot to catch up on the news. So we're just going to jump straight into that. And you know what? We could all use not just news that isn't about viruses and pandemics, but we could just use good news in general. And most of the stuff that we're going to talk about tonight is good news.
Yeah, we have a lot of good news.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. So let's start with good news for our friends across the pond. Disney Plus is coming to the UK in just a few days. It starts on March 24th, and you've still got a few days where you can sign up early and get a discounted year of access to the service. So if you sign up by March 23rd, so the day before it launches, you can get a full year for $49.99, which regularly a year would be $59.99. And then the regular ongoing cost is going to be £5.99 every month. So we've got a link in the show notes that should give you everything you need to know to get ready for Disney Plus in the UK, what you can expect in terms of content that's there, what will be there soon, what you can expect from like which devices are supporting it, everything that you could possibly imagine that you might have questions about, of course, answered by the folks over at wired.co.uk. So tons of information for you there.
One thing to note here is that even though this is a later release than we had in the US, those titles that have been released week by week in the US, you're going to have to wait for them week by week in the UK. That seems ridiculous to me, but I guess that's how it rolls.
It's a shared experience, right?
Yeah, everybody gets a little pain there.
Some people like it this way.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, while we're speaking about Disney Plus in the US and some other countries as well is now streaming Frozen 2. Now, you might say, wow, that's really fast. It is. It wasn't due to come to Disney Plus for 3 more months. They put it out early because people are spending so much time at home. And so it's available in the US, Canada, Netherlands, Australia, and New Zealand. And if you have Disney Plus, you can stream that now. As of the time you're hearing this, no matter where you are in any of those countries.
I might actually file this under bad news because...
This means it's going to be playing all the time. Yeah, but come on. I mean, you could watch it all the time anyway. It just, I guess, makes it more easily available to the kids, right?
Yes.
Six Layer in chat says horrible news.
It seems like my youngest daughter is finally starting to go back to some of the old things she used to watch and listen to instead of just nonstop YouTube videos of other people singing songs from
singing
Frozen
into the unknown. I do have to admit that's a catchy little song, but anyway, all right, catchy big song. There's more news. There's more actual good news, interestingly enough, that is related to the bad news that we're all living now. And that is that NBC Universal is the first of the major studios to break the traditional theatrical window. This is the practice that the first place that a movie goes, of course, unless it's maybe Netflix or something like that, is to the theaters. And it stays in the theaters for at least 3 months before you see it on some streaming service. In what I believe is a very smart move, they are making 4 films available for rentals day and date with their release in theaters, which is kind of stunning.
It is really surprising news. And this is going to be digital rentals, right?
These are digital rentals, right. Now, as I say that that's kind of stunning, between the time that this was announced and now when we're recording, more and more states have basically closed theaters. So day and date with theater release, this may be the release for these movies. These movies may not actually see time in theaters.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so, that's one thing that I've been trying to figure out too, because my family is so excited for the live action Mulan movie. Mm-hmm. And you know, like my oldest daughter's birthday is at the end of the month, and going to see Mulan was part of our birthday plans, and now we have no idea when it's going to even be available. So,
right. And it'll be interesting to see, too, what Disney does with that movie in particular, because in China, they moved that movie back. Would they consider releasing it in digital form, or are they going to wait until they can put it in a theater? Who knows at this point? Anyway, let's get back to the NBC Universal move. They are going to make four movies available. Trolls World Tour, which is the follow-up to Trolls from DreamWorks, I believe that was. I guess that's cool. The Hunt, The Invisible Man, and Emma. None of these are blockbuster films, right? This is a very safe cache of titles to try this with.
I don't know. I think Trolls World Tour is kind of a big deal. I like, it's not Frozen, but those Trolls movies have done really well.
Yeah, and it's smart that they have a kids film, because what's going to end up happening is the parents are going to rent it. They'll get that rental money right up front. Kids are going to love it. Maybe might even talk their parents into renting it a second time. And you know, when it's available for purchase, they're going to end up having to buy it.
Right, right. So just to clarify a couple of those details, the rentals are probably going to cost you about $20. And it's going to be normal digital rentals. You know, you've got 48 hours to watch it. Trolls is going to hit on April 10th. But the other movies that Richard mentioned, The Hunt, Invisible Man, and Emma, which I've never heard of any of those movies, by the way, but I'm not.
Oh, come on. Really?
Really? I've not heard of any of them.
Okay.
They're not Fast and the Furious movies. So. Which Fast 9 also got delayed. So those are all going to be available like as early as this Friday. So if you have heard of them and you want to watch them, there you go.
Yet another telling of Emma. And although I think you might like The Hunt. So
what is it?
We'll have to see. But go check it out.
Okay.
Go look for a trailer.
That's my homework. Okay.
Yep.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about MB. MB is some software that we've talked about previously, and like going back years and years and years into the history of this show, it used to way back when be called Media Browser, and MB is kind of a play on that MB initials from Media Browser. They've got a new version out now, and it's a really big improvement in things for those of you who are running MB on a Windows machine.
Like so, a home theater PC.
Like a home theater PC. So they've got better scrolling performance and faster navigation using the A to Z pickers for when you've got really large media libraries. They say HDR playback has improved considerably. I don't know what that means, but it sounds good. So cool.
Yep.
They've also added a new black theme. They've redesigned their menu for adding things to a playlist and to a collection. Just looking at the screenshots of MB, Richard, this looks better than I remember it looking. Oh,
it brings back delightful memories. They are not letting go of Metro Design.
No, they're not. And they're doing it well, I think.
Yeah, they really are. I'm very impressed. It's been so long since I've used Media Browser. I haven't ever tried it in its MB form. And just seeing the screenshots, I was so impressed with what was there. So, yeah, it's cool. Maybe we might see Plex get some legit competition.
Yeah, so I have some questions for our listeners, because I know we have lots of listeners who do use MB instead of Plex, or maybe even alongside of Plex. And I'd be curious to try it out. It wouldn't be hard because similarly to Plex, they have apps on everything. You can run this on Apple TV, on Roku, on Android TV, on Xbox, PlayStation. It's on Android and iOS, of course. They've got a web client. It is everywhere, just like Plex. So that part is easy. My two questions are, one, is it easy to try out alongside Plex? You know, these types of media consumption or media library tools like this tend to throw extra files and stuff like that in alongside of your content and stuff. And I don't know if they would play well together. So I need to know the answer to that. And one of the really cool things about Plex is you're able to create user accounts and let your friends log into your Plex servers. And I do that with a fair number of people. So does MB have that sort of functionality? The other thing that I want to remind our listeners of, especially those who aren't using MB right now and maybe are using Plex for live TV and DVR, MB has a traditional grid guide. So if you're looking for that, you know, if that's what you hate about some of the other DVR solutions out there, MBE might be worth checking out for that reason alone. So lots of good reasons here to give MBE a shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. And, you know, that sharing thing, we've always kind of questioned, well, you know, how are they getting away with that sharing? I mean, the industry's never going to put up with that sharing thing, right? No industry service would ever let you share your movie library.
Never, never. Except maybe Movies Anywhere.
Woohoo!
didn't the old movies?
No,
it was
old called, Ultraviolet.
Ultraviolet
used
yes.
to let you do this in the early days of Ultraviolet. This was one of the things that they would allow you to do, which is to share your library with other people, with other friends. Now, Movies Anywhere is not implementing something where you share your entire library, but they are allowing you to invite friends to watch up to 3 films a month. That's like dipping your toe in the water.
Yeah. It's an interesting way to start this. The new feature is called Screen Pass, and these limitations are kind of weird. Only 3 films a month total. So like I could share 3 movies with you and be done for the month, or mm-hmm. one with you and one with a coworker and one with Six Layer in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for the month. But there are some good things to this. So one, about 80% of the library that's available on Movies Anywhere can be shared, but not everything. That was expected, right?
And what that means is that there is a studio, or there are studios that don't want to participate in this.
Yeah, not surprising at all.
Yep.
But that's good. And then the other good aspect of this is if I let you, you know, if I lend you a Fast and the Furious movie, I can still watch it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That's better than me lending you my 4K Blu-ray.
Right. It is. And it's better than just even traditional library lending that you would have on digital content. So
yeah,
the fact that they're allowing simultaneous viewing or simultaneous access to this, I think that's probably the biggest deal here. The other things, like you said, some arbitrary and weird limitations. If you share a film, then your friend has 7 days to accept the offer. They have 14 days to start watching it. They have 72 hours to finish it once it's started. Note that for some insane reason, these numbers are completely different from anything you're familiar with already for rentals.
Right.
But hey, it's progress.
Yeah. Yeah. This is pretty much entirely good news. Unfortunately, the one downside that maybe isn't so great is it's not quite available to everybody just yet. It's still in beta, whatever the heck that means, and it's supposed to roll out in a larger sense in May.
That's okay. But
this is cool. Okay.
This is cool.
This is good news. Yeah.
All right. Now, I was all over this next story.
No, you weren't. No, you weren't. That's why I was surprised that you even started talking when I went to introduce the story. What the heck, Richard? No, you don't care at all about this story. You don't even care about this service, I bet. The service that we're talking about here is Fubo TV. It is one of the many online live TV streaming services, similar to Hulu with live TV or YouTube TV. It's always catered to sports enthusiasts. And the real news here is just that they're adding NHL Network and MLB Network to a couple of their add-on packages. Those packages are called Fubo TV Extra or Sports Plus. The first one is $5.99 a month. The other one is $10.99 a month. If you go with the Fubo TV Extra one, the addition of NBA TV, and you get NBA TV, these two new networks, NHL and MLB, and a bunch of other channels you won't care about. The Sports Plus one is all of that, plus NFL Red Zone, and tennis and Pac-12 networks, if you're rooting for college teams on the West Coast, that one is a little bit more interesting. But this news caused me to take another look at Fubo TV. It's a more compelling offering than I originally thought it was, because I figured it was basically just sports stuff, but it's not. The standard plan, it's $55 a month, so right in line with everybody else. It includes local networks, but it doesn't do like what Sling does, where it's like you get the Fox stuff or you get the NBC stuff. Like on the sports side, you've got Fox Sports 1, NBC Sports, NFL Network, CBS Sports, Big Ten Network, Olympic TV. ESPN's not there, which is obviously the big downer. But on the like TV channels for the rest of your house, the non-sports watching part of your house, a lot of big name networks here too. A&E, BBC America, CNN, Food, Fox News, HGTV, USA, TNT, Discovery, TLC, Weather. The big ones there that are, of course, missing are those Disney properties. There's no ESPN. There's no Disney Channel. But if you don't need those, Fubo TV, looking like a pretty decent offering for what's out there. I don't think there's anybody who's offering all of that sports stuff at these prices.
I had completely forgotten that they added non-sports channels a little while ago, so that you could really make this your TV package. When we talk about cable alternatives as streaming services, we don't even list this.
Right.
I guess the only place that this wouldn't work for you is if you're the kind of person who might also want to tack onto that one of these premium networks like HBO, Showtime, Stars, something like that.
And they do have a Showtime option that you can add on.
Interesting. Showtime, but nothing else?
I don't remember there being anything else. Huh.
That's interesting. All right. Good stuff, though. This is our one audio news story, and it's regarding Sonos. I think people know I love me some Sonos. And Sonos kind of stepped in it this winter when they announced their plans for new devices coming out that wouldn't be compatible with old devices. And so they encouraged people to upgrade, and they bricked people's old devices when they did upgrade, and that got a lot of people unhappy. And then they told folks that the old devices were going to stop working. And then they backtracked on that and they said, okay, they won't stop working. They'll just work separately. And then they backtracked on the bricking, and now they won't brick your devices if you upgrade them anymore. You can still use your old devices. It's been a big old mess for Sonos, but they finally came out with like their plan. Like, they finally let people know what they're going to be doing going forward. They expect to have new devices coming out later this year. And to support all of those new devices and new features that they're going to roll out, they're going to have a whole new operating system. They're calling it S2. So Sonos S2 is going to be compatible with all of their newer devices, but not their legacy devices. And remember, those legacy devices are things like the Kinect Amp, the first gen Play 5, the very, very early Zone players, things like that. There are not many of them. There may be 6 different models that it's not compatible with, and one of them isn't even a speaker. So that means that the entire other line is going to be compatible with this new operating system. What will become known as S1, the Sonos that we all know and use today in terms of software that runs it and that we use and interact with, is not going to go away. That is going to continue to function. So if you have new devices and new devices only, then you'll be able to just upgrade everything to Sonos S2. If you have old devices and none of the newer devices, then you'll just stick with the Sonos software that you have. And if you have a mix of them, you'll have the ability to kind of create 2 separate Sonos networks, one that runs the new S2 software and one that runs the S1 software. You won't be able to use them together. You won't be able to group speakers across systems. So this is what they were talking about, where they said you'd have a legacy system and a new system that would get new features. When they introduce new features, they're only going to come to S2. New features will not come to S1. What you have come June in the existing Sonos software is going to remain what you have for that Sonos software. They will maintain it. They will keep it up with security upgrades. They are not going to enhance it going forward. So we kind of understand now a little bit more about what they're doing. Looking at this, I have to say, man, I'm just such a sucker. All things being equal, there's enough information here that might drive me to upgrade at least one more of my devices to one of the newer models.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it'll be interesting to see how consumers take to this. I think this is reasonable. I feel like they probably could have come out with a solution that would allow you to bridge the systems, but that very likely would have been more costly for them and more technologically challenging. And so they're kind of taking a compromise solution here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true.
So that is it for audio news. And now we have some gaming. We have a bunch of gaming news, actually.
Yeah, it was a big week. Really, it's kind of a bad time of the week, actually, to be recording the show. We're recording on Tuesday. On Monday, Microsoft announced a whole bunch of stuff for the Series X. But on Wednesday, Sony's going to announce a bunch of stuff about the PlayStation 5. So this week, you're getting a bunch of Xbox news. Next week, come back for all of the updates on the PlayStation side. But before we get into either of those, I want to talk about E3. E3 has been canceled for this year, and that's not surprising.
Right.
Not really, because all of the big conferences are getting canceled right now. It seemed a little bit early to be canceling it because E3 doesn't happen until June. It's like the second week of June, but they did it. And
then let me just weigh in here on why this is smart. Companies spend an extraordinary amount of money on conferences.
Mm-hmm.
If you're presenting, if you're launching a product or announcing a product or whatever, just the amount of investment that goes into this, and the earlier that you can know that you don't have to spend some of those funds and you can redirect those funds to handling something virtual, the better the companies who would be participating are going to be.
That's true. It is true. So about a week prior to this announcement, I had been thinking I really should write a blog post about how I think E3 is probably going to get canceled. And if it does get canceled this year, it could be the end of E3's. Like, it might never come back.
Mm.
And I think that's a real shame. But the reason I think it might never come back is the biggest players are barely even players in E3 anymore. Nintendo's only kind of there. Microsoft is only kind of there. Like, Microsoft used to have, you know, a giant booth on the main show floor. Last year, they just set up some mixer stuff over there and held all of the rest of their stuff across the street. So it wasn't technically part of E3. Their big, huge press conference is at their own theater, which is not technically part of E3, and it happens technically before E3 opens. Sony didn't go last year at all and had already announced they wouldn't be going to E3. And then, of course, there's all of the curmudgeons in the gaming media who have been complaining for years that E3 is less and less relevant and blah, 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 blah. The same sort of crap, Richard, that you and I hear all the time about CES. And I think
Right. They're
wrong about E3 for the same reasons that people are wrong about CES being outdated and stupid. But aside from all of that, the other problem, if E3 dies, the biggest problem is this is one of those major conferences and events where it's not just about showing stuff off to consumers. It is also about business partnerships and meetings between different companies. Like, this was the year that, you know, at events like E3 and at events like GDC, which also got canceled because it would have been a couple weeks ago, where smaller game studios would have been meeting with people from Microsoft and with Sony to talk about getting their games to be launch games for these new consoles. And now they can't do those face to face, like at all now. And those types of, like, that's just how this business has always worked. It's how all businesses always worked.
Well, right. And don't you believe, though, that that's reason enough that this would go on in the long run? I mean, that's my argument for CES.
I don't know, because will it be enough to bring in enough money for the organization behind E3 to keep wanting to put it on?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm not sure that it will bring in enough money for that. You know, like, if Sony's not there already, then they've already lost one big player for those other game studios to even be meeting with.
Right. And the bigger names that you're losing, A, they're less likely to be sponsors, and B, you're losing the deep pockets in other sponsors.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's probably the worst news that we've got for the show tonight. I think everything from here on out is going to be back in the positive category. So let's talk about the Xbox Series X. There was a huge event this week. Well, not even really an event, like really a coordinated news dump of lots of interesting things. So we're going to have a bunch of links in the show notes. So head over to thedigitalmediazone.com and check out all of these articles, especially if you really like to nerd out on the details, because that's really what they did. They gave us like all of the specs of the Xbox Series X and then went super deep into how some of the really cool new features are going to work. So we've talked in the past that they're doing something with storage to make it really fast and to greatly reduce loading times. And so they made a video to show the difference in loading times, where they set up an Xbox One X, you know, the fastest current Xbox console you can buy, next to an Xbox Series X, both of them ready to launch up State of Decay 2 at the same time. And the video is like a minute and a half long, and like, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds into it, maybe not even that long, the Xbox Series X, it's fully loaded and the person is walking around playing the game. The rest of the video, you're waiting for the game to load on the Xbox One X. it's kind of a boring video because you're mostly just watching a loading screen, but it really proves the point about how much faster these load times are going to be. It's going to be great.
That's cool.
It's going to be so great. Yeah. They released a similar video showing off the quick resume functionality. Again, not necessarily the most compelling video ever, but it showed one person hopping between five different games. So play a game for a little bit, open up the quick menu, switch to a different game. You see a title screen for like five-ish seconds, and then bam, right into the game. No loading screens, no menus, just I was in the middle of this section of Ori and the Blind Forest. I'm right back there. And they did this through five games because it's able to do that for multiple games at a time. Even if you reboot the system, apply system updates, like, it's crazy. It'll do quick resume for all of that. It's not just Series X games. It does it on Xbox One games. It does it on Xbox 360 games. It's impressive, and it's going to make switching between games really, really great. They also talked a lot about latency in general. There's new technology that they're building into the controllers to decrease latency between the controller and the console. And then some of the rest of this we've already talked about before, but some technologies through HDMI 2.1 that will decrease latency from the console to your TV. It'll of course do 4K at up to 120 frames per second. Apparently with these HDMI enhancements, that whole pipeline has 8.3 milliseconds of lag. That's half of what it is under HDMI 2.0, I guess, These are not numbers I was super familiar with beforehand. But HDMI 2.1 also enables variable refresh rates on TVs. They're going to be able to put your TV automatically into low latency mode. And then, of course, like this is kind of required, right? They will be including an ultra high speed HDMI cable in the box with your new Xbox because it'll be required. So they're giving you one. So that's really great. Another link we're going to have in there is for an article talking about all of the really deep technical specs, you know, what's the processor and all of that sort of stuff in the Xbox Series X. It's all there in all of its 12 teraflop goodness. But the big thing here worth really digging into is the storage. That's what we've been waiting to figure out. Like, what are they doing for storage? And what is that mystery slot on the back of the console? Now we know. We had talked in the past about how much storage will be included. I didn't look it up. I think we wrote it down that I predicted it would come with a terabyte of storage. A lot of people, I think you included, said that's not enough. And you're kind of right. It's not enough. But you're absolutely right. It's not really enough. But that's what's going to be included. 1 terabyte of NVMe SSD storage that they say, using their new Xbox Velocity architecture, can instantly load 100 gigs of data off of that SSD into memory. Or I guess that wouldn't be memory, but, you know, load it up instantly, 100 gigs. That's crazy.
No, that would be into memory. You're loading it from storage into memory. That's amazing.
Well, but you don't have 100 gigs of RAM. It has 16 gigs of RAM.
Well, right.
But that's impressive. So 1 terabyte, it's not enough. It does support USB 3.2 storage, which is fast, but it's not fast enough to do this stuff. It's not fast enough to do the crazy fast load times or even the quick swapping between games. So yes, you can use USB hard drives. You can play Xbox One games and Xbox 360 and original Xbox games directly off of a USB hard drive, but you will not be able to use a USB drive to play your Xbox Series X games. So how are you going to deal with that? Well, expansion cards. Bring back the memory cards of old. It's kind of like that. It's kind of a lot like that.
PCMCIA cards?
They don't look exactly like that. They look a little bit cooler, I guess.
Wait, are they going to look like clear plastic chips like all computer chips are in the future?
No, the mock-ups that I saw had black plastic on them.
Oh, okay.
So we're not living in the future yet, Richard.
Not yet.
So, but apparently they're going to be selling 1 terabyte expansion cards that will have this NVMe memory inside of them. We don't know how much they're going to cost. They didn't say that. They did say they'll be available and you can just plug them in and, you know, swap things around and play games directly off of them. You could take them to a friend's house and play games directly off of them. And they're also not building them themselves. They're partnering with Seagate right now. So Seagate's been in the storage game forever. I kind of hope that it won't only be Seagate, because if it's more partners, then theoretically the prices come down. That's generally how the free market economy works, but we don't know for sure. So no prices on that yet. Maybe by, you know, when they announce the pricing for the console, we'll know how much these expansion cards cost.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we need to mention you're absolutely definitely getting a 4K UHD Blu-ray drive in the Xbox Series X.
And that's no surprise.
It's not a surprise.
I think it's really smart the way they're doing USB storage on this, because this makes it crazy easy to port your existing games over. If you already have them on an external drive, or if you want to move them to an external drive from your existing box, this is probably, I would think, faster than downloading the things that you have if your library is under 1 terabyte, but it's very likely larger than that.
Right.
So you could get, nowadays, I think you can get a 4 terabyte just drive powered mini drive
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think the other area where this comes into play is maybe you do end up storing some of your, you know, lesser played Series X games on the USB hard drive, just so that you don't have to download it again.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay.
You know, because if a game is going to be 150 gigs, like, we're still in a lot of places dealing with data caps on our home internet.
Just thinking that. Yep.
Yeah. So, yep. I mean, mine's 1 terabyte through UVerse, so that's a lot, and I don't ever really bump up against it. But if I had to reinstall a couple of Series X games, yikes, that's a lot of data.
Yeah, that is a lot of data. Hey, while we're talking about that, this is a little bit of a tangent, actually a big tangent, but there is discussion that the FCC may kind of strong arm providers to eliminate data caps over the coming weeks. And so kind of keep your ears tuned for that news. If you're worried about not being able to do everything that you're used to doing because you already hit your data caps and now you have to say work from home, or likely you're going to have kids streaming more than they were before, hopefully that's not going to be an issue for people.
Yeah, and some of the biggest internet providers in the country have already said that they're going to at least temporarily eliminate those data caps, but not everybody. Certainly not all of the companies.
So check with your provider.
Yeah. And if they're not doing it yet, make a lot of noise about it.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Because they should. All right, one more gaming story. And this is a short one. A quick update to the Project X Cloud preview. They've added an interesting and cool little feature to this. So a quick reminder, Project X Cloud is the Microsoft Xbox game streaming service. So you don't need a powerful console or a powerful PC. You can do this from your Android device. And what the new feature is when you open up the Project X Cloud app, you'll now see 5 trailers for games they think you might be interested in. And as you watch a trailer, it'll also be loading the game in the background so that if you decide, yeah, this game looks pretty cool, I want to check it out, it'll already be partially loaded for you. And that's just a really nice quality of life kind of feature to add to a service like this. So that you couldn't do on a normal console because it's 100 gig download to a normal console. But in a streaming service, you can totally start spinning that up right away. So I think this is great. They're going to be, you know, swapping in which games have trailers and stuff so that you're getting exposed to different titles. And there's already over 50 games available in Project X Cloud for you to check out. So if you are in the beta, but maybe haven't used it in a little while, fire it back up on your Android device and give this a try. All right, we're not going to do Games with Gold or PlayStation Plus free games because we did it last time. Click the links in the show notes if you aren't quite sure what's available out there. Instead, we're going to jump to what's going on in our entertainment centers. And we always start with you, Richard.
We do. And I have a bit of a surprise in mind, unless you follow me on Twitter. I did something a little bit unusual for me this past Saturday, which was, by the way, Pi Day, March 14th, 314. I set up my Raspberry Pi.
Cool. What did you do with it?
This is the first time I've ever messed with a Raspberry Pi. The bad news is that I didn't set it up, as we had discussed on this show, as a wireless or Wi-Fi control setup, but instead I'm using it with Homebridge. So I'm using it for my smart home stuff, bringing things that aren't part of HomeKit into HomeKit. And it's pretty cool. I will go into way more detail on that whole thing after I've had a little bit more time under my belt with it in a future episode of Home On. Now, I also set up a recommendation from one of our listeners in a previous episode, and that was Infuse 6. We talked about this product, Infuse, as a potential solution to some of the things that I was frustrated with in Plex and some of the other things that we were seeing in the different services. So I set up Infuse 6, and sure enough, it's kind of awesome. It's a much, much nicer user interface experience than what Plex is offering. Way more traditional. You have to do a little bit more setup with stuff to get it to work the way you want it to. But I am really impressed. I signed up for the 1 month free trial of their pro version. You need to use their pro version. There's a free version, but you need to use their pro version if you're going to do stuff like playback audio files with movie files with 7.1 sound, use Dolby Atmos, have a playback of other files from like Media Center and stuff like that. So just to make it work, I'm trying the pro version. It would cost me $60 for a lifetime version of the pro version if I decided to go with it. I just kind of swapped it out for Plex on the main Apple TV, and I haven't heard any complaints yet. It basically does a lot of what Plex does, but more importantly, it syncs with Plex. What it doesn't do is it doesn't have all of, and yes, I'm going to call it this, cruft of all of the other media stuff that Plex is trying to be. It doesn't have audio and photos and live television and DVR service. It doesn't do that. This is a playback, a library management and playback place. So all the recordings that Plex is recording for me in the background and all of my libraries that Plex is indexing and everything else all get exposed in it when they're available. It's pretty slick.
That is cool.
So I am excited about this. I will report back on what decision I made after we have a little bit more time to use it. In terms of stuff that I've been watching, I watched another episode of This Is Us, but I am not yet caught up. We've been watching the 12th season of Doctor Who. That finished, so we completed that. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Watched another episode of The Flash. I am caught up on Picard. Picard's been really good. I put my finger on what's bugging me about Picard, though. Besides all of the things where they're kind of bringing in fan service guests that don't always have a really pivotal role in the storyline itself, this is basically a serial now. This is no longer episodic. Picard is a 10-episode arc of a story. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about that with a Star Trek piece, you know? So I also have been watching Homeland, but I am not caught up on that. I have not yet watched this last weekend's episode of that. I did finish my rewatch of Westworld season 2 in preparation to begin Westworld season 3. But I was so tired yesterday, I fell asleep when I started watching Westworld season 3 episode 1. So also Grace and Frankie season 5, we're almost finished with that season. We've been watching CNN's The Windsors. We did watch Frozen 2. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the music. As we were watching, Edward was like, did the first one really have this much music in it? This much singing? Like, I think it did, actually.
I think so.
Yeah. And perhaps not surprisingly, I've been watching a whole lot of news, although for obvious reasons, not all political.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that has been what's going on in my entertainment center. How about you, Josh?
Well, there's no more sports to watch, Richard.
This is true.
Yeah. So no hockey, which makes me sad. I miss my Penguins. I miss hockey in general. Yeah. So no hockey, which should give me time to be watching shows like Homeland or something like that, but haven't really made much time for that. I have been playing a few more games. So I mentioned the Division 2 earlier, the Warlords of New York expansion, played some of that. Ori and the Will of the Wisp, the new Ori game, came out this week on Xbox Game Pass. Actually, last week it came out. It's so good. I've only played like an hour so far. It's really good.
Cool.
As I fully expected the next Ori game to be. It's great. my youngest daughter came up to me while I was playing it over the weekend. She's like, can I play? And I'm just thinking, you don't have a chance. Like, this game is hard, but sure, here you go. It was at the very beginning of the game, so it wasn't too bad. But yeah, Ori and the Will of the Wisp, it's great. It's in Xbox Game Pass on PC and on console, so go and play this game. It's so good. And then the new, it's hard to even describe this. There's an add-on to Call of Duty Modern Warfare called Warzone. So if you already have Call of Duty, it's just included. But it's also being made available as a standalone free game. And it's got a traditional battle royale mode, which is cool, I'm sure. Didn't actually play that mode yet. But they've also got a new mode called Plunder. And it's similar to Battle Royale in that there's, you know, a whole bunch of teams of three in one giant map. But instead of it, you know, a circle closing in on you and trying to be the last man standing, there's also, you know, amongst all of the caches of weapons, there's caches of money. And you're trying to be the team that either collects $1 million for first, or when time runs out, has the most money. When you kill people, you take half of their money, and you can bank money by calling in helicopters to like send your money out. But when you do that, everybody knows that there's a helicopter coming in and where it's coming. So everybody comes to where the helicopter is, which makes for really intense fights. And then the other thing that it does is at numerous times throughout the game, it'll just tell you the top three teams, they're in this area on the map. If you want to go and rob them for their money, here's where they are. Go and find them. So there's some really cool gameplay stuff that they added to it, and it's a lot of fun. I played it for a couple of hours over the weekend with some of my regular gaming friends, and we had an absolute blast. And you know, we've been kind of hinting around this whole coronavirus struggle that we're dealing with here in the US and many of us around the world, and not really being able to interact with people physically right now. Gaming is giving me some of that social interaction back.
Yeah.
I had so much fun playing with these guys that I would normally see every single day at the office. And now I don't, because we all have to work from home all the time. And I'm so glad that I have the opportunity to work from home. I'm not complaining about that, but I miss people. And yeah, gaming is a really great way to get to interact with your friends. So I'm really happy that I have that as one of my hobbies. So if you're a gamer who hasn't done it in a while, fire your console or your PC back up, get a hold of your buddies that you used to play with, spend some time with your friends. It's a great way to do it without spreading any viruses around.
Yeah, I that's really cool. I'm glad you mentioned that. At the risk of being yet another voice of what you should be doing during this time, I want to just kind of say that entertainment is really important. People are going to be going stir crazy, and it's so important that you take time to do things that you enjoy. And it may be hard to like think of things or remember what things you enjoy doing. I'm really interested in finding out what folks are doing that's different. How are you using entertainment devices or services differently than you might have before? Have you taken on any new projects, either by yourself or with family members? Things that you've wanted to do, like maybe I wanted to, try this new product, or I wanted to build that Raspberry Pi and make a media server or something like that. Share with us, if you can, some of the ways that you've been using entertainment and technology to help bring some normalcy to your family and your household during this time.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm super curious to hear what people are doing, and the rest of our audience is too. If you're sitting there thinking, they don't really care what I'm doing, we do. And so do the rest of our listeners. So share those tips and those fun things that you're doing. All of our contact information is in the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. You can hit us on Twitter @RichardGunther, @JoshPollard, at DigiMediaZone, and all the other places, like I said, are in the show notes. Richard, you've got another podcast that you do. You teased it a little bit earlier with your Raspberry Pi project. It's called Home On. You're covering lots of smart home technology over there. What's going on with Home On?
Well, that's a good question, because while I should have been editing the most recent episode, I was in fact building my Raspberry Pi project. So sorry about that, but I do expect that by the time this episode of Entertainment 2.0 hits, we'll also have the new episode Home On out, where I get to talk with one of the product managers from Samsung SmartThings. We had a really good conversation. It's a little bit under an hour of content. They're up to a whole lot of cool stuff, and I think you'll enjoy it.
I personally can't wait to hear this episode as a SmartThings user. So cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we're continuing to do this show live Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern. Live means there's audio and video and a chat room. So if you're just dying to geek out right now with some people with like-minded interest in all this stuff, come and join us. We tweet when the show is going to be happening so that you're prepared for that and can show up. It's a lot of fun, and we love having you guys there for it. So that's going to do it for episode 512. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
See you.